call the 4 p.m. meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. Thank you, committee members, for coming around twice and on our first day. And we have one item of business before us, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 1. And I'll ask the committee administrator to tell us a little bit about SCR1.
Yes, Madam Chair, SCR1 establishes a schedule for the 2007 Legislative Assembly. It includes provision for a February 2008 special session limited to consideration of the most pressing fiscal and policy issues. Madam Chair, SCR1 is addressed by your House rules also, your House Rule 8.20, paragraph 5. States that to extend any of the deadlines that are in SRC 1 would need a, this is committee deadlines, would need a 40 affirmative votes.
Thank you, Mr. Administrator. And I see in the audience that we have, I believe, a panel of very auspicious witnesses ready to come forward and testify, so the chair will call Senate President Peter Courtney, as well as Gary Wilhelms and Jenny Lang. I believe you three had agreed to appear as a panel.
Madam Chair, that was auspicious.
It's just general auspicious. Either suspicious or auspicious.
Audacious.
Or audacious.
All of the above.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us so late in the day on Friday, and we are very glad to have you here. I will, probably recognize Senate President Courtney as our first witness. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Berger, Vice Chair Buckley, Representative Hunt, Representative Urban, and I know that Representative Thatcher couldn't be here today, members of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, which is District 11. It's portions of Salem and includes Jervis and Woodburn. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, northeast here in Salem, 97303. Thank you for letting me come here today to testify on this Senate Concurrent Resolution that passed the Senate on Monday afternoon by a 23-7 vote. If the resolution were to pass out of this Rules Committee and onto the House floor and pass, it would basically create significant change in the legislative structure, I believe, since 1872. In 1872, the Senate went from 16 members to 30 members, and the House, I believe, went from 34 members to 60 members. And that's the last really significant change in terms of structural change that the legislature went through, and that was back in 1872. Just to review how I came to this situation, it was a bit by accident. It was the realization in the summer of 2004, going through some old files in the Senate President's office. Since I had so hurriedly become the President in 2003, some of you may recall that, with 1 hour notice, that we had never really moved in, and I'm not even sure today we fully moved in, but we found that in 1968 and again in 74, they had these commissions that reviewed the legislative structure. And those commissions basically evaluated the legislature as an institution, outside persons looking in, and it made many recommendations, some of which we take for granted today, but were, for example, legislative physical office, legislative revenue. That's all a result of those kinds of the work that they did. And so I had grown to believe, and I have spoken to this before, that the legislature is an institution, especially since, I'd say in the last 10 or 15 years, starting, I think, in the 90s, I started to sense that it has become rather tentative and hesitant in certain ways. And it's just seemed to me that that in some ways, and I remember, I don't know when the first time I made the speech, or if anybody was listening to the speech, that I used the word which I used on Monday, if you were listening, that I thought that as an institution, it no longer was equal to the other two branches, and that was just my gut feeling. And so I thought maybe it was time to look at this, and I discussed it with Speaker Karen Minnis, and she agreed. And at that time, we were simply going to appoint a commission, and then the good person, Marjorie Taylor, suggested that I suggested rather than just go appoint a commission, you should put a piece of legislation on the Senate and the House floor and see if your fellow legislators think you should do that. And so that's what we did. In last session, there were 26 senators said yes, one said no, and 56 members of the House said yes, and there was no votes that said put together this commission. And the commission of 30 people from all walks of life went to work as a result of my and the Speaker's joint agreeing on those individuals. The commission surprised me, to be very frank with you. I remember meeting with him that first day saying the sky's the limit, and they took that literally. And I also told them that I was going to keep my hands off firewall. I did not come to testify. I would not. The last time I appeared before the commission, my chief of staff, Connie Seeley, was forced into work there because of the likes of Gary the Wilhelms. And so we put her on it, but not as my voice or my anything. She was free to do whatever she wanted. And I used to watch late at night the reruns of the subcommittees. And they studied facilities, they studied technologies, they studied staff, they studied process. And I just couldn't believe how hard they worked. I was just blown away by it. And I can't believe the number of recommendations they came up with. And I'm not going to get into all the recommendations because they're very significant and they're very revolutionary. But there was one which caught me by surprise. And that is, not that they said we should look at retiming, but they said, and you should show how it works. You should do the retiming before you ask the voters to do it. I never expected that. That one caught me totally by surprise. I just thought one day, if we ever went to an annual session, however you want to find it, that something we put on the ballot, either by the legislature or by the public, and the voters one day would say yes, and then the next legislative session would do it like it was said. That's not what this commission said. They said you owe it to the public to show how this thing would work. And basically, and this is outlined in my written testimony, what I'm doing is simply paraphrasing that rather than just reading testimony. And so that brings us to SCR1, which outlines in detail what the, if you will, 07 session would look like and references the 08 session. And basically, it's all said and done, it is an attempt to say this is how we're going to conduct our business and retime this legislature to show the public how it's done and also to show us how it's done for those of us here. Because I do believe it will be this generation legislature, I do, that will bring us to some form of annual session working with the public. I do think that is going to happen. It's very close, and I think even most people in the public, and I really will say that, I do believe as critical as they become of legislature at times, when I saw what happened in November 7th regarding 41, 45, and 48, to me that was the most significant sign that the public was willing to say, okay, whatever we've done in the past, fine, and we still have our suspicions, but go to work, and especially when term limits were shot down, which I don't think has happened any other place anywhere. I think that was a statement to say legislature lead, and I think that they are ready for this, and I think this is a remarkable proposal. And I'm joined here by two individuals, one of whom is the co-chair, Gary Wilhelms, Republican, and then there's Jenny Lang. Jenny Lang, I believe, she was chair of the subcommittee on process, so she was the guru that put together retiming in terms of her subcommittee work. I believe Jenny Lang was on one of the public commissions, if I'm not mistaken, in the past, say, or chair or committee staffed it. She staffed it, which was a 74-1, a 74. So she actually staffed the 74 review, and then she comes back some 30 years later to be on the commission. So with that, I'll stand for questions, comments, or criticisms. I just want to appreciate the fact that you're willing to let me come here today and to make this statement in support of SCR1.
Thank you very much, Senator Courtney. Are there any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, can we hear from all three before we ask? Or
we certainly could, except that we do have another legislator in the room who has asked to testify next, and so I was going to then ask our two other witnesses if they would mind just holding for a few moments while we take that testimony and then have them proceed.
That's fine.
And, Mr. President, are you able to stay with us, or would you like to entertain any questions there might be for you right now?
I'll accommodate the committee, whatever it wants to do. I guess I think you've indicated, Chairman Rob, you wish to have the representative or senators in the audience come up and testify, so I'll step back.
That's great. Thank you very much. Senator Starr, would you like to come forward?
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr. I represent the great citizens in Western Washington County and the communities of Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains. And I appreciate the opportunity, very much appreciate the opportunity to just talk for a minute about SCR1. And I also want to put on the record that I compliment the great work that the Senate President and the former Speaker and the current Speaker have put forward as it relates to the Public Commission. I know that a lot of effort during the interim was put into that process, and I think by and large came out with some really great recommendations for this legislature to take a look at. SCR1, I voted against this resolution on the Senate floor on Monday. And let me just be real clear. There's a lot about SCR1 that I like. And most legislators, and I'm going to make a generalization, doesn't apply to everybody, but a lot of legislators haven't lived in what I would consider a normal, regular legislative session environment. A lot of legislators don't know that the legislature generally isn't in the building in July. That's not normal. The last two legislative sessions aren't how business is typically done in this process. I've been involved in this process for a long time. When I walked through the rotunda in January 8th, it was my 20-year anniversary when I first walked into this building and worked in this process. The legislature generally gets its business done somewhere around the 4th of July. So in history, a six-month session every 2 years is kind of what I think should be expected of us as legislators. That's my primary concern with SCR1. It is an annual sessions bill. Well, that's what it is. I've voted for annual sessions in the past. I support it. I think it's important with constitutional limits so that we as citizen legislators know when we're going to come in, when we're going to go out. The citizens know when we're going to come in and when we're going to go out. My strong belief is, however, that we shouldn't do it in a fashion that lengthens the time that we're going to be in this building in a two-year biennium, in a two-year cycle. And that's what this does. It brings us here for 7 months, basically. And I appreciate very much the desire to get out of here on June 29th. And for all of us that lived through the last two sessions, we're all cheering because we're not going to be here in July. Well, that's terrific. I don't want to be in the building in July. I want to get our work done and get on back to our regular life and the citizens' pocketbook and tax dollars will be protected when we leave. That's my concern. I have amendments that I've drafted. I hope I provided a copy to the chair. I don't know if the members have those amendments. But in a nutshell, what they do is instead of giving us a July 29th end date, it gets us a May 31st end date. Gets us out of here 1 month early. Is that going to be tough? Is that going to be difficult? Is that going to be doable? I think it is. I think it could be if we just did it. And we could also then go to the citizens and say, not only are we disciplined, that we're not going to go to annual sessions and spend all this time in Salem. We're going to limit our time in Salem to what is traditional, what is typical, and that's 6 months every other year. In my perfect world annual sessions environment, we're here maybe 120 days and then 60 days in the off in the other year. That's kind of where I would think that it would make the most sense. That's not what is before us. That wasn't what was before us on the Senate floor on Monday. As somebody who believes that annual sessions make sense, as you look at the responsibilities that we have as policymakers to kind of run this $50 billion corporation, it makes sense for us to be a little bit more hands-on, and I think annual sessions make that happen. I think this, unfortunately, doesn't assist us in our conversation with our constituents in that process. That's, in a nutshell, what I have to say. I would ask that you consider those comments. Again, I can't sit here and say I don't appreciate all of the work that has gone into the creation of what is UC before UNSCR1, the work of the commission. I know a lot of thought was put into that. But we are the policymakers, we are the decision makers, we're the ones that were elected by the citizens and the voters in the state of Oregon to really make a decision about how this works. So I appreciate the opportunity to put this on the table. You all are in a position to make a decision one way or the other and recommend to the full House which direction you would like to go. If there's questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And Madam Chair, I appreciate your allowing me to testify kind of maybe a little bit out of order.
Thank you, Senator Starr. And the amendment that you referred to, my legislative assistant had brought to me about, I guess, 45 minutes ago when I was in the previous committee. I didn't realize you hadn't actually provided that to the committee administrator, so our committee assistant has gone to make copies of that amendment. And
yeah, basically, it moves the end date from June 29th to May 30th and then moves up some of the other boundary or deadlines that are in the bill. It's relatively simple, but it does create a more condensed timeline. Other states go in and get their business done in 3 or 4 months, and they are big states and little states. Are they smarter than us? I don't know. Obviously, they have different processes, but I think we could do it if we wanted to, and I think it would assist us as legislators in making that argument down the road with our constituents and the citizens of the state of Oregon. Again, thank you for your allowing me to testify.
Thanks for your testimony. Are there any questions of this witness? Thank you very much. Okay, so if we could have our previous panel come back forward. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang, and today I am here as the former chair of the Process Committee of the Public Commission on the Legislature, a post that I was delighted to be appointed to and enjoyed the work of the last year and a half. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes today talking to you about the work of the Process Committee and how we came to this recommendation. First of all, the committee was made up of the following members. Frank Bronner, who is a former longtime lobbyist in this building. Kim Skerritt Duncan, a former Deputy Secretary of State, lobbyist, and manager of a number of agencies. David Frommeyer, former legislator, Attorney General, and current President of the University of Oregon. Senator Abel Gordley, who has been in this building and around this process for many years. Tim Hibbetts, a longtime pollster in Oregon. Barbara Carmel, a former university professor and currently a business consultant in the Portland area. And Hans Lindy, a former staffer, law school professor, Supreme Court Justice, and also a current member of the Oregon Law Commission. So I hope that tells you that we were working with a group of people, none of whom were shrinking violets, and all of whom brought a lot of energy, thoughtfulness, dedication, and good thinking to this process. The topics that the committee worked with over a period of over a year matches in some ways the name of your committee, Ethics, Elections, Ethics, and Rules. We took up topics including open primary, nonpartisan legislature, a state controller, a redistricting commission, initiative reform, campaign finance, annual session structure, committees, bills and amendments, and budget notes. So we had a wide array of topics. The very first one that we dealt with was session structure, frequency, length, and timing, because it was sort of the elephant in the living room as far as what everybody thought that the public commission was going to deal with. So we spent all or part of 5 out of the 13 meetings that the process committee held on the topic of session structure. We heard from a great many witnesses, including current and former legislators, current and former lobbyists and staffers, the League of Women Voters, and a great number of others. The bulk of the work that we looked at was based on trying to figure out ways that would make the legislature more effective in its decision making. So to that end, the two centerpieces of the recommendation that we brought forward were the one are the ones that include SCR 1, which is to set up a time frame for the legislature to do its business. The second part was to try to figure out a way that members of the legislature would have time and space, if you will, to learn not only how to be legislators and what the process of being in this building is all about, but a great deal more about the topics that you all have to deal with when you get here. So that the original recommendation put in place sort of a hiatus after you came in and adopted rules, were sworn in, did all of what you've done this week, to essentially have a couple of months where you might spend time in your assigned committees learning in depth about topics that you are going to be dealing with. The committee heard a great deal of testimony about the fact that there's such a rush to get people elected and then into the legislative process, and you're dealing with a jillion bills and you don't know each other very well, and this whole partisanship issue kept coming up over and over and over, and how could people work together on contentious issues if they really didn't have time to learn enough about the underpinnings of some of those issues as well as get acquainted with each other. So part of the reason that our original proposal included more time for the odd-numbered session was to try to figure out a way that you could have some time at the front end of the session. Some people referred to it as a ramping up, so that you weren't in daily floor sessions, but rather a committee on transportation, for example, might take some time to do a tour of the state and find out about, you know, bridge construction or congestion in the Portland metro area or whatever the issues are, and that might have a dual purpose in preparing legislators better to deal with the issues and also provide an opportunity to get acquainted on a professional basis with the people that you would be dealing with and making decisions with throughout the session. The committee believes that the recommendation that was taken to the full commission in April of last year, that it provides the best opportunity to give the legislative branch a really equal footing to be an equal and an equal branch, and not leave the field vacant for the executive or the judiciary to sort of have their way if the legislature, in fact, doesn't lead on issues that are of importance to the people in the state. So we also noted that over the last several decades, this is the 62nd time that some organization or other, including members of the legislature, have tried to bring forward the idea of the legislature meeting on an annual basis. We would like this to be the time that this legislature says, we're going to do everything we can to figure out how to do this, to prove to ourselves and the people that it can be done, and then go and say if it is in fact necessary to have a constitutional amendment at some point to put in place some different dates or kinds of structure, that you would be in a position to make the case to the people that you know what you're doing, and that it works, and that it is time for the state to have this kind of a structure. So I would be happy to answer any questions about how we arrived at the recommendation, and I would welcome those questions.
Thank you. Mr. Wilhelms.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Wilhelms.
It was my pleasure to serve as the as one of the co-chairs of the Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature. I also would like to make a couple of comments that are based on my previous service as a chief of staff for a presiding officer. But the charge for the Public Commission, as I remember it, was to make recommendations to the legislature for you folks to act on that would help improve both the efficiency and the image of the legislature. And I believe that this measure gets right at the heart of both of those things. The efficiency of the legislature will be greatly enhanced, I believe, if the legislature has firm dates to which to manage. That's one thing that's been missing ever since I've been here. And it was my honor always to write the memorandum for the presiding officer at the beginning of the session that said, okay, gang, here's the dates you're going to stick to, and we're going to finish right on schedule. And as soon as I'd send out the memorandum, everybody would kind of wink and laugh and kind of poke each other, and we'd immediately try to find ways to get around those. I wouldn't, but everybody else would, I guess. And so we did. And I really don't think that's a good way to manage a business as serious as this is. Therefore, I think the establishment of these dates, by you folks all voting affirmatively on these dates and codifying, if you will, to a certain extent, these dates, is going to go a long way toward helping the efficiency and achieving the single objective that I believe will make you look better in the eyes of the public than anything else you could do, and that is finish your business and get out of town by the 29th of June. I think that that will go a long way towards showing the public that you can get it, that you can do it, you are efficient, and you've tended to business and so forth. I just think it's a good thing. Because the one thing that you are not going to have the luxury of doing any longer, I don't believe, based on what we heard in testimony in the commission, is nothing. You're not going to be able to not do anything. You're going to have to do something to get this straightened out. And I believe that this measure does give you the opportunity to do that. The measure, I believe, is the underpinning or the foundation for the retiming, and is going to probably be the single, as I've said, the single most significant thing that you can do to help yourselves manage toward that sunny day adjournment. The thing that I also liked about it a great deal and compliment the committee on is that when we started with this, we had people on Gene's committee that wanted us to move directly to a constitutional amendment and refer one out to establish in the Constitution annual sessions. And you're all aware of the history of the annual session issue, and the fact is that there are it's very very evenly balanced. We don't even know exactly where the Oregonian is today on not the Oregonian newspaper, I mean the Oregonian the body, where they are today, but it's pretty close to 50-50 whether they think it's a good idea or a bad idea. This procedure that's been set up and it came out of that committee is a try it and see if you like it procedure, and it means not just the legislature to try it and see if they like it, but it will allow the state of Oregon, the people of the state of Oregon to try it and see if it has a payoff, see if they like it. And I think that it's a good approach to do it that way. Finally, I'd say that and I totally support Bruce Starr's concern, Senator Starr's concern about trying to finish earlier. I think it would be great if we could finish earlier, but we're going to have to do this in incremental steps, I believe. And I'm totally committed to the dates that are in this measure. If we can tighten them up in the future, great. I think it would be wonderful if we could, after we try it and see if we like it and if it works, if we can back it up to a May adjournment someday. But I don't believe that that's in the cards this time. So I'm totally supportive of the dates the way they exist, and like the idea of an optional annual session where you've got to ballot yourselves in during 2008. I think that it's all a great idea. It fits well. It responds to the testimony that we heard. It responds to what we heard from a lot of legislators. It responds to, I think, how other states are operating these days that are faced with pretty much the same situation we are. So that's about all I can tell you today, is that I think both as co-chair, I support it because I think it's a great recommendation. As a former chief of staff, I think it's great for a management tool. So I'm there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments. And Senator Courtney, did you have anything further that you wanted to add? Or should we open it up for questions?
Please.
Okay. Representative Burkert?
Thank you. I feel like it's nice at my point in life to feel like a rookie freshman, but when I look before me, I see three people who know so much more about this process than I even raise the surface of, but it's almost sort of a presumption for me to ask some of these questions. But my only experience in legislative process has included been the last two sessions, which everyone admits were unusual in terms of budgetary issues. And so there's in this mind this thought that what I went through, which I think is very ripe for serious reform. I'm not arguing that at all, which this attempts to address. And in the back of my mind, is it a function of the budgetary issues and the experiment or the term limits, or is it our process? And you stand before me and with a great deal more experience and say we believe that process has to be addressed in a way that we don't have these kind of long, rancorous process that I went through. And I'm persuaded by your experience and your wisdom on this. But I have one critical question that I don't know in your committee if it came up, but certainly I'd like you to speak to it. So we go through this and we stick to these timelines. What's the measure that tells us, oh, it was a success, or, oh, it was just shorter? Is just shorter the answer, or is it, you know, did you talk about, so we this is an experiment by our own rule. So how are we going to say it was successful in this, and this? What are the this, and this that would say, okay, public, now we want you to buy this? Or what are the this, and this that says, no, it's probably not a good idea? Was there discussion about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Burger, there was a lot of discussion about many of the things that you mentioned, including term limits, budget process, and so on. We did not try to put together a matrix of success measures. I will grant you that. What we did, and many of the pieces of work that we did came in or resulted in sort of packages. Included in this one, for example, is that the budgeting process should continue to be done on a biannual basis, regardless of whether you would be here every year or not. Part of it was that the Ways and Means Committee should be a joint committee from beginning to end. So what I think we concluded is that if simply meeting deadlines would be a significant measure of success. And I mean, I'll just be blunt about that. It's very confusing the way it has been in the past to get a list of dates from one house about what's going to happen over the course of the final 3 or 4 months, and you get a different set of dates from the other house, and there doesn't seem to be any place that those really meet. So I think rancor would be a measure of success. I'm not sure that it would be that you could lay that at the feet of this kind of a proposal for sure, but the notion of having some way that you have time to get better acquainted. I don't know how else to say it, but to come, to have a space during the session where you begin to know one another in a different way than just this, what looks like to the public, constant bickering at each other over practically everything, would be a measure of success for me. So shorter, yes. More efficient, yes. More effective, I don't know quite how you measure that. I think those are things that would be worthy ideas to try to sort through as we go through the experiment, the experimentation process of implementing these ideas.
Mr. Berger, this is my observation in response to your question. Rather than, it is my opinion that the media and the public starts to come after us starting July 1. That becomes the only thing that matters is the clock on the wall. I have long said that. Starting about 10 years ago, I started to say that. And I absolutely believe that's true. So that no matter what you do after July 1, you're a failure. A lot of good things were done, with all due respect, my fellow Democrats might like to hear this, in 2003 and 2005. But it'll never be recorded in the next 10 to 20 years. It will take historians 50 years to sort that out. But the reason it'll never be recorded is because we didn't get out until August. Special sessions. I have been in 16 of Oregon's 36 special sessions. And it doesn't matter what you did in a special session if you went too long. It's you went too long. So my response to you is that if we stay within these time limits, we'll get no credit for that. There'll be no praise for that. There's no glory in that in terms of the media or the public. The light will then shine on what we did with the budgets and the kind of legislation we passed. But you can't get that light to shine on unless you control the situation at the time. Now, having said that, it is no longer fair to judge the Oregon legislature by a June standard. I'm very thankful and respectful of Senator Brewster's statement, and particularly since he brought it to my attention yesterday. But you need to know something. I have said in the last 10 years that the legislature cannot do its business under its present structure within June. It isn't that we were fighting that drove us into July and August. You just can't do the job. And let me give you an example. This is fact. This isn't Peter's opinion. This is fact. If you go back to the 73 session and come forward to the last session, that 17th session, I'm going to quickly tell you the ending date of the 17 sessions. And watch this. 73, July 6th. June 14th, July 5th, July 4th, August 1, July 15th, June 21st, June 28th, July 4th, June 30th, August 5th, June 10th, July 12th, July 24th, July 7th, August 27th, August 5th. Out of 17 of the last sessions, five of them, only five ended in June, and one of them, the last one in 95, I was the leader of the House D's, and Senator Representative Clark came to me and said, I've had it. I'm going to outdo the Senate. We're going to close this down. What do you want to do, Peter? And what's interesting, we did close it out on June 10th, but then you look at your special sessions, and if you look at your special sessions in 95 and 96, what will you find? July 28th, an eight-day special session, July 28th to August 4th in 95, another special session, 96. We were able to end that session on June 10th, because we kind of deal, we're going to come back in special session. So that one also would never have come down. I was here. I know what is going on. In addition, if you go back to 1974 and come forward, the legislature has spent 153 days in special sessions. 153 days in special sessions. 20 out of Oregon's 36 special sessions took place between 1974 and 2005. 20 of them, which means 16 took place between 1860 and 1971. My point is, this idea that you can get the job done by June, I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican, I don't care who gets elected, it won't work. 1860, if you go back here and look at all the sessions, you'll see them ending, oh, here's one, they end in February. Then they start to end in March, April, May. Realistically, my fellow legislators, we haven't been able to end a session since 1995, and actually, we're starting to get the signal in 1973. that this thing had to go beyond June. So I really do want to point out the fact that we're held to a June standard in terms of whether we're successful or not. That's not fair. It's not realistic. So even if we do this in June, and we will do it in June to come back in February, we're not going to get any glory for that, but it will then shine a light on what we do substantively in budgets and in policy things. And that's the best answer I can give you, Representative Berger.
Representative Hunt.
I would just like to give Representative Berger three measurements that you can look at. I believe the first one would be, if you get the work done by the end of June, it will have been a more efficient system, because you are going to have at least as much work to do this time as we did 2 years ago. The second measurement would be editorial support. Now, we all like to joke about editorial writers, and that doesn't make any difference anyway. But we all feel it, and we like positive editorials better than negative editorials. And the editorial writers will treat you pretty darn well, I believe, if you're out of here by the end of June with your work done. And finally, you're going to feel it in your heart. You're going to know if you've been successful.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like Representative Berger, I've never experienced a session ending before August. I think Representative Berger and I were starting to think we were the problem. It's actually nice to hear that the problem dates back to 1974, but we were not the problem for these long sessions. I'm especially interested, obviously, the Commission. First of all, thank you for the excellent work on the Commission, all the time that you, Mr. President, put into getting them launched, and then all the work that Gary and Ginny and your fellow committee members put into the last 18 months. You obviously spent some intentional time looking at this issue, and Gary talked about it some, but maybe Ginny and President Courtney could comment on it as well. The issue of, do we go straight out with the constitutional amendment and just say, let's come up with a timeline, try and lock it into the Constitution now, send it out to the voters, or what's proposed in SCR 1 of, let's do an experiment. Let's set a set of dates that seem right, see if that is the right mix, try it, evaluate it, and then decide whether or not to go forward with the constitutional referral. Gary talked about that in substance, but I'm wondering if the other two of you at least could reflect on the wisdom of this course versus the going straight out to the Constitution with a bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, we were very deliberate in making this decision rather than going straight out with recommending to go straight out with a constitutional amendment. Part of the reason was that I can't remember how many times, 50 plus, that other approach has been tried. And as Gary mentioned, because it's about 50-50, it has never happened. The voters have either turned it down or it hasn't made it out of this building. So the other thing that we took into consideration, frankly, was the fact that we were looking at the two of the longest sessions and, five special sessions in 1 year. The idea of suggesting to you that you pass a measure out of this building and put it in front of the voters after that 3 or 4 year cycle seemed ludicrous to us. So there isn't anybody in this state that was happier than me with what you did with your special session in 2005, because by then this recommendation was already out there and had been approved by the full commission. So we were very deliberate in doing this rather than asking you to go directly to the people with a constitutional amendment.
I always thought a special session would be created by a vote of the people, either we refer the initiative, and that's how we would get there. And when they came up with this idea, it just stunned me. It very much fits my philosophy. The legislature should make decisions as opposed to letting the initiative process. But here's the situation I'm calling. We said, this is the time, if you look at the wisdom of what they said and how they came to no later than June 29th, and then the February 08 session, it just didn't happen. At one time they were thinking about April 1, no later than July 30th. And we said, Oregonians don't like to be inside on July and August. I can tell you that. We just don't like it. And so it moves back to March 1 when we start meeting on the floor every day. I didn't presume, you know, that's what this says. In addition, if you look at the original proposal, it was to come in and maybe around single digits January and go all the way through February. You'll notice now it's only February. That's the kind of thought that's gone into this. So it is with that in mind, when we do this, and I'm hoping we do it, we may find when we go to the vote with the people, because I do think it should come to legislature, that, for example, 08 session is different. We may find we don't need as much time, or we may need to get back and get those 2 weeks because of the pressure in January. We may find that maybe this June date instead of, I mean, some of us thought maybe we should take less time in June, but June 29th says no later than that. It's rather been safe than sorry. That might move in terms of our proposal. But until we try this, I'm not sure we can get the feel of that ebb and flow or the rhythm. So I think this is a very dynamic thing that we're doing, dynamic process, so that when we do go to the vote of the people, when we make the case, we have experience with it, and it has some substance to it, as opposed to a bill which was passed the Senate last time, fellow legislators, a bill on annual sessions, Senator Devlin's bill passed by 24 votes and came to the House, and then it stayed there. But rather than do it just that way, this is a way in which this generation shows how you do it. We may adjust what we put on the ballot. So, Representative Hunt, I think that is probably why I now support this, and I have to say the wisdom of it is remarkable. And I never would have thought of doing it this way until the Public Commission made that suggestion.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you all for your work on this. Very much appreciated. And I just can't tell you how much having clear dates and deadlines means to us. I've never been part of any process that hasn't had them. And this will be a great benefit to us. I wonder if you'd be willing to comment on the question of constitutionality. Some of our colleagues have brought up, and Representative Thatcher's letter brings up, the concern that by suspending the Constitution and doing the kind of trial run of the annual sessions, that somehow we are moving in a way that is unconstitutional. And your reflections on that would be appreciated in response on that.
And before you answer that, I should probably let the audience know, I think committee members have some written testimony from Representative Thatcher. He couldn't be here today. I don't know whether copies of that were put out
or distributed
on the
yes.
table. So
there's some back in the back for anyone who doesn't have it.
But that testimony certainly is part of the official record of this hearing. She wanted it to be, and as well as there's some written testimony from State Treasurer Randall Edwards in support of SCR1 that is part of the record too. Okay, go ahead if you have a response to that.
As I recall, during the deliberations, somewhere along the way, we received opinions from legislative counsel on this question. And I believe, I just heard when I walked into the room, that legislative counsel has been requested for a further opinion on this. Based on that and based on the discussion that we had, I never thought about the unconstitutionality of this again. I thought it was totally fine. And we went back to legislative council with regard to how we actually go about calling, how you go about calling yourselves into special session during the even year, and we got very explicit direction from legislative council on that. So our legislative council was involved to, I think, a pretty significant extent in reviewing this process and procedure. I would be interested in what they have to say again, but I felt totally comfortable throughout the deliberations because of what I thought was a green light from the State Council.
Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Buckley, I invite your attention to lines 21 through 40, 34 of the bill. And what you'll see here is the reference January 2000, the presiding officer shall provide notice and legislative administrator of the intent to invoke ORS 171.015, etc., to ensure that special session shall convene on February 4th. Then it goes on to make further references. And one of the references is Section 10A, Article 4 of the Oregon Constitution. The legislature comes into special session one of two ways. The governor can call us in, or the legislature can call us in. Out of the 36 special sessions, only once has the legislature ever called itself in. And that was one of the 2002 sessions, I believe. I remember it very well, because I voted against it. There is a very definite process that's used where we ballot ourselves into session. That process will be used to bring us in February 2008. That is why I believe, and my city council's here, I believe, to speak on it, this does not violate the Constitution. In fact, fully complies with the Constitution. Now, we're not just passing legislation through this that says we're coming back in February of 08. We can't get back in like that. That won't work. We have to ballot ourselves in. The same process that was used, and I wish I could remember which one of those special sessions in 2002, that was used where we literally, as an individual legislators, there had to be 31 in the House, there had to be 16 in the Senate, a ballot has to arrive at the chief clerks in the House, and the Secretary of the Senate. That is the process that we will use so that we comply with the Constitution. It's my understanding that the City Council is here to comment on that.
Quick follow-up?
Just your follow-up.
Thank you very much, Senator. So to clarify, we will need to go through the process of voting ourselves in, just to confirm.
Chair Rosenbaum advised you about that. That's exactly right.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Thank you. And I guess additional clarification, so I would assume from what you just said that if that did not happen, for some reason, if there weren't 31 and 16 signatures on an official notice, that we wouldn't be called into special session. And I see that Legislative Council is in the room, and we would love to hear from you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what President Courtney states.
And could you please identify yourself?
My name is Ann Boss, Legislative Counsel. And the reason that subsection 3 is written the way it is to comply with the Constitution. And it's my opinion that it is fully compliant with the Constitution. It doesn't attempt to amend the Constitution. In fact, it relies on the current constitutional process that is set forth in 10A, and it expresses the conditions under which in the future the members will invoke ORS 171 and 10A and if the goodwill continues, which we believe exists now, and the emergency continues to exist, which is expressed in the declarations on the first page of the SCR1, then we will follow the process to the letter to have a constitutional special session that will serve as the pilot.
Can I just can they pick me up here? Can you pick me up? All right, just so you know, I want to be so in effect, balloting, if there were not 3116, you're right. We're not coming in. Listening, how strongly I feel about that. But absolutely, every one of you who receive a ballot, every one of you can ballot. You ballot one of two ways. You sign it or you don't sign it. Anyway, Chief Clerk has got to get 31 votes in the Senate. They got to be 31 ballots to say yes. And over there, the Secretary of the Senate has got to receive 16 votes that say yes by a certain deadline, or we're not coming in February 2008.
Thank you for that clarification. And I
So just, I think, paraphrasing and what you have told us, then, that we, this resolution is basically announcing an intention to invoke a provision that's in the Constitution. It's not waiving it, and it's, it still would require the normal process to be followed, that we would have to declare an emergency and then call ourselves into special session through balloting through a legislative administration committee. So
that's correct. It is expressing the present intent to do that and follow through with it. And at the time that we calculate would be needed in order to get into special session on February the 4th.
Yes. For the record, I'd just like to make sure that it's clearly understood that when this recommendation was passed out of the commission, we did that after we got the advice from Legislative Council that the Legislative Council just repeated. It was passed out with a full understanding that it required the legislature to ballot itself into special session.
Thank you. Are there other questions from committee members for these witnesses? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for enlightening us and doing so late on a Friday afternoon. Thank you. We have no one else signed up to testify on SCR 1. I'll ask, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to do so? Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on SCR 1 and open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 1. So we are now in work session, and committee members said we will entertain comments or motions at this point. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, when I first glanced at this, and I mean literally glanced at it, I thought that it was very, I thought it was way too many days to be in session. But I have done some homework on this, and the good senator was precisely correct. In the last 10 sessions, the average session has lasted 185.8 days. So we're talking 186 days. That didn't include the special sessions. So what we're proposing here, I did some, and of course I went to Medford, so somebody better check my math. I think we're about 194, 196 days. So we're only asking for 10 more days, calendar days. And if you have 180 days in 6 months, we're asking for 6.5 months. I don't think that's too outrageous. As for the constitutionality of this situation, or whether it is constitutional or unconstitutional, I don't think that we determine that. I think that's what the attorneys do. So therefore, I was begrudgingly going to send this on with a yes vote, but now I can get behind it. I'm okay with this.
Thank you. And that comment, Representative Berger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, my reaction to this is in some ways funny. In my house, I have closets, and this timeline reminds me of my closets. No matter, you know, what your timeline is like a closet, you're going to fill it. So I look at this as the outside, although I've heard it repeated. Well, this is the outside, and we could be less. Well, I could probably clean out those closets, but I can guarantee you I won't. This is the time that we will probably fill. I'm not persuaded that it's too out of line. But I am kind of convinced that if we said this closet was going to be smaller and actually move them to tighter timelines for some reason, Senator Starr outlined some, we'd probably, if we were determined enough, meet that deadline. However, I am persuaded by the testimony before us that these people thought through a lot of this, and their timelines were based on some substantive things that they felt were reasonable, and they have certainly better experience than I do, so I'm not terribly uncomfortable at this point with moving forward. I did ask the question about measurements quite deliberately, because at the end of this, we may, as Mr. Williams stated, feel good, but I generally feel good at the end of a session because I know how hard I've worked.
But that doesn't mean that the citizens of the state of Oregon think that I got anything done. And so I'm kind of looking for, okay, if we did that and walked away and felt really good about it, would that in any way persuade the people of Oregon? I mean, I don't even know how many of them read editorial comments that are favorable or not. So I guess I'm looking for, if we do this, and we all feel good, is that truly going to persuade the people of Oregon that this is something that they should put in their constitution? And boy, I don't have the answer to that. I don't think anybody does. But this is certainly a better system of getting at that than just presenting, as was mentioned, oh, here's a constitutional change. You want to buy it? You know, so on those, with those comments, I am very willing to enter into this agreement with my colleagues to do it differently and sort of enter into a compact with the citizens that this is a timeline we can keep and we will keep, and we hope at the end that you like our work, our process a little better than you have in the past.
Representative Hood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might just, you referenced the letter from Treasurer Randall Edwards. I thought, if it's okay, I'd just might read a couple of key lines into the record, because they struck me as an additional benefit of the of trying this process that had not really occurred to me. Treasurer Edwards said, quote, all these benefits of annual sessions lead to a better functioning, more stable government with the flexibility to act in a meaningful way. From my perspective as state treasurer, annual sessions would have a positive impact on the state's overall financial picture. They would also help improve the state's credit rating, meaning the state would pay less interest on the bonds it sells, which leaves more money available for services like education and health care. The whole fiscal responsibility piece of this, by having strategic times that allow you to act based on court rulings or changing financial pictures or ballot measures, I think is a whole additional aspect as we try and operate in fiscally responsible ways. I think an additional key benefit of pursuing SCR 1.
Thank you. Representative Merklin.
Yeah, I just want to commend the commission again. And I, for one, have felt for a number of years, watching from the outside before I was elected, that the legislature, as Senator Courtney, President Courtney stated, was losing its authority in our system because of, and in particular because of this system we have in place. Our commissions and all the other people were doing the work for a year and a half when we were out of session. And the ability to correct things and to look at stuff as it was going on wasn't happening. Even though we were having special session after special session, it was coming about because of a particular emergency that had to be dealt with, rather than looking and seeing, are all of those agencies and all those commissions doing the things that the people who were elected were expecting them to do. And I think one of the benefits of this will be the citizens who are elected, the citizen legislature, will come here to look at what's being done by our state in a more regular basis. And the power of the emergency board, just a few elected members, will be less because all of the members will have a voice. And I am pleased, as I watched the commission work, that they also acknowledged a lot of the things that will help make our state a better place. So I again, just thank you and look forward to voting for this motion.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move SCR1 to the floor with a do without recommendation.
Representative Buckley has moved SCR1 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Baldwin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Excuse.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And we need a carrier for this, and I believe that Speaker Jeff Merkley has expressed an interest in carrying this on the floor, so I will assign him to be the carrier. And seeing no further business to come before us, we are adjourned.
We're all voting no then.
Oh, no.
we'll jump in there.
Yeah, we're going to take out the speaker. He's not going to hear that.